We're live.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Alan Levy Show at blogtalkradio.com. Be prepared to call in now and chat with Alan and his very special guest right here at blogtalkradio.com. With no more further ado, please welcome your host, Mr. Alan Levy.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Alan Levy Show on Blog Talk Radio. It's a pleasure being with you today. We have a very special show. Today, of course, is Thursday, March 27th at 4 p.m. Eastern, and our guest today is Andrew Morton, one of the most famous authors in the world, and he's joining us today. And my co-host today is Dawn Olson. Dawn is of Glossip.com, which is a network site of blogcritics.org. If you'd like to call into the live show, you're more than welcome to. We encourage participation, and that phone number is 347-677-0649. That's 347-677-0649. We also have a chat that's going on right now, and that chat can be found on blogtalkradio.com on the homepage, as well as / Alan Levy. So first let me bring Dawn in. How are you, Dawn, today?
I'm good. I'm very excited to be here, and thank you so much for opening up your show and letting me co-host with you. This is really great.
That's my pleasure. And so let's get right into our guest, though. So Andrew Morton's here. We're honored for Andrew to be with us today. He's arguably the most famous celebrity biographer in the world, having covered such high-profile subjects as Princess Diana, Madonna, and Monica Lewinsky. With each effort, he's turned what might otherwise be misunderstood, even polarizing figures into fascinating subjects while shining a brilliant light of insight into what makes each of them interesting to the consumptive public. Of course, his latest book, Tom Cruise, An Unauthorized Biography, was published by St. Martin's, and Andrew's here with us today. How are you, Andrew?
I'm good, thanks. Nice to talk to you.
Well, great. Thank you for joining us. And I guess you're in New York now, is that right?
Yeah, I'm in New York for the next few days.
Well, that's great.
Enjoying the rain.
It's a bit stormy and rainy.
Yeah.
Unlike London, of course.
Unlike balmy London, yeah.
Balmy London, which is raining and dark from about October 15th until April 1st.
That's about right, absolutely.
That's right. So, Dawn, why don't we get started here in talking about this book and you know, this fascinating topic.
Well, sure, I'd love to. Now, Andrew and I met yesterday, so we're going to touch on some of the subjects that we covered. And there is a video interview, which I think is really great, up on glosslip.com if people are interested. I released two parts, and I will release the rest sort of in increments as I get them uploaded. But as the book begins, you know, Andrew first, of course, starts with the formative years of Tom Cruise's life and how, you know, he was sort of influenced by his family unit. So one of the questions I'd like to ask, you know, Andrew, is what impact do you think Tom's early life had on Tom kind of as an adult now?
Well, obviously, we're all shaped by our childhoods, and Tom Cruise is no exception at all. The fact that his family moved around a lot from America to Canada, the fact that his father had an abusive relationship with him, that he was a bit of a drunk, that his mother, a devout Catholic, took the very unusual step of basically taking all the children away from the father in the dead of night when they were living in Ottawa, and taking them down to Kentucky, where they lived in Louisville for Tom's teenage years. All very significant factors, and he's spoken on a number of occasions about the anger he felt towards his father, and also you have that the fact that he's never had a good word to say about his father, never had a bad word to say about his mother. And he at the age of, 12, he became the patriarch of the family, given the fact that his mother had left her husband. And always seemed very comfortable around women and very kind of in charge, very much the father figure.
You know, it's interesting that he's comfortable around women. One of the things that you are able to lay, I should say one of the rumors you're able to lay to rest in your book is that, you know, for years Tom was dogged with rumors that he had a secret gay lifestyle or that, you know, he'd had sort of this, you know, other world that he delves in with his sexuality. And you make it very clear early on that Tom is a very hetero man who enjoys the company of women in all the facets, including, you know, a motherly sort of matriarch relationship, his sisters, but also with a slew of girlfriends. What do you think that says about him?
Well, I mean, the first page of the book is about how he gets, quote, married in the school playground when he was aged 11 in Ottawa to his childhood sweetheart. And since that time, there's rarely been a day where he's not either been married or had a girlfriend or a long-term relationship. And he's someone who, it's quite clear, as I discovered in the research, that he doesn't like to be alone. He likes to be surrounded by people. He likes his family around him, not just the family, his immediate family, but the family of Scientology that kind of embrace him. He always likes to have a warm body in the house. And what I found curious was really the number of rumors about his sexuality, which have been not just on the internet and by word of mouth, but have been published in magazines in Germany, in America, and also in Britain, where he successfully sued a Sunday newspaper for saying that he and Nicole Kidman had just had a business relationship and that he was sterile and gay. So, you know, in a curious kind of way, what the book does is turn that theory on its head. And in many respects, he is a victim of the roles he's played, because Top Gun, the role that gave him international stardom in 1986, they had very homoerotic undertones or overtones, and that started the whole rumor mill going.
What do you think? Was that the first big? I mean, obviously, he's one of the biggest movie stars in our day, right? And where do you think it really started in this huge appeal, you know, with Tom Cruise had? Do you think it was the movie before Tom, with Rebecca De Mornay, which was a young guy, and
he drove
the Porsche into the water? That
Risky
was the,
Business. Risky Business was the
Risky
one that,
business,
was the
which,
one that set him off. He'd made a couple of movies before that, but he was part of kind of the Brat Pack of young, aspiring, ambitious actors like Patrick Swayze and Sean Penn and others, and it was very quickly apparent that Tom Cruise was showing the rest of them a clean pair of heels, especially after Risky Business, which some of the others were offered the part but turned it down. They thought that the movie itself, Risky Business, was way too frothy and light, and he took it on, and he showed that he had good comic timing, and he had that kind of boy-next-door appeal, which endeared him to young girls and also to their mothers. So he had a ubiquitous charm.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that movie really did propel him. And then, kind of, if you track his career after that, Top Gun was
in the 1990s.
Right. Nicholson. Jack Nicholson.
A Few Good Men.
Yeah. A Few Good Men. But that was a bit later. That was in the 1990s.
Right.
But before Top Gun, he made a film called Legend, which wasn't that great, which is more of about him playing a woodland creature. So not all the movie, all the choices were great. But then he made, after Top Gun, he made Color of Money, made Rain Man, and he made Born on the 4th of July. So that triumvirate of movies, he kind of squared the artistic circle, because not only did he show that he had acting ability, but he also was commercially successful. And so in a way, that is what anyone in Hollywood, or anyone in the music business, they're always looking for the artist that is also commercial. And this is what Tom Cruise proved to be pretty early on, that he had that kind of persona that endeared him to middle America.
You know, I saw an interview you did, Andrew, with Bill O'Reilly, you know, for this book. Not a very pleasant interview, by the way, from his part, not yours. And he suggested that Tom had no influence. He said Americans don't care about Tom Cruise. But I disagree, and you disagree. Why do you think Tom matters?
Well, I mean, at the time, in the 1980s, he represented kind of where America was at in the age of Reagan, the age of when the Cold War was ending and the Berlin Wall was coming down. He represented a kind of American optimism at that time, of the a kind of brazen confidence, cockiness, really, which these days I don't think America does have. But at that time, America felt very strong, very powerful, very cocksure, very confident, and in a way, the persona, the film persona of Tom Cruise represented that, certainly in Top Gun. You know, he really set that swagger, that style of the good-looking guy with the grin as a template for the future. So, I mean, but then you go on through that, and obviously his career has spanned some 25 years, and take it through to the present day, and he's now the head of, as we know, United Artists, which is a studio founded just after the First World War. So he's a character who is a very powerful figure in Hollywood, and he will remain so for the foreseeable future. He will shape the future of entertainment and popular culture, whether you like it or not.
And I guess that's why, I mean, you've chosen this topic, and after such successful books prior about Diana and Madonna, I mean, what really motivated you to write this book? Was it the aspect of the Scientology? Was it just his place in our culture, in media, in movies, and so on?
I mean, when I look at what my body of work, I tend to go for figures who have got something to say beyond themselves as an individual. So Princess Diana obviously sparked a debate about the monarchy and the nature of the monarchy in Britain. And Monica Lewinsky sparked a debate about the nature of politics, the nature of the White House, the nature of what was going on at the dark heart of government. And then Madonna, who's just been honored in the Hall of Fame, you know, what she's done not just for pop culture but for popular culture. And with Tom Cruise, what I find interesting that, you know, that he has... we live in an age of celebrity worship, and he is worshipped. And so, and also we live in an age of religious fervor. And, you know, his adherence to Scientology, the faith that he's been supported for over 20 years now, is something which is inescapable from his personality. And I was initially intrigued, quite simply, like many other people, by seeing this person who is, as it were, the male version of Madonna, very kind of controlled, very tightly wrapped, in everything's very considered about him. Here he is abusing Oprah's couch and declaring mad passionate love for a woman he's only known for a few days.
Since you mentioned the Scientology angle, this was something I didn't get a chance to ask you yesterday, and it's really been plaguing me. Do you think... Now, you said you had mentioned that Tom had joined Scientology when he was really at the top of his game. I mean, he didn't really have to belong to Scientology. In fact, he sort of hung his star on a failing religion that was under a lot of scrutiny at the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've seen sort of a transformation from Tom being the poster boy of Scientology in a more silent way, but in the last couple years, obviously, he's become more of a proselytizer for the religion. Do you feel that he would be more successful or less successful if Scientology were not in his life? How do you think it's influenced him as a star?
Well, it certainly influenced some of his choices. For example, he was offered the role of Edward Scissorhands, which eventually Johnny Depp took on, and because on the advice of his friend David Miscavige, who's the head of the organization, he decided against doing it. So, I mean... that he would argue probably that Scientology has helped him in his choices, and that his career has evolved thanks to their encouragement and support. I mean, I think one of the aspects about being a film star anyway is that you're never quite sure that the choice you're making is the right one. You know, the thing about Hollywood is that nobody knows anything, and nobody knows the alchemy that makes a successful film. I think that certainly he would argue that he's always said that he's had dyslexia, this reading disorder, and that his adherence to or involvement in Scientology helped to cure him of that, and was able to read film scripts and so on a lot easier. So that's one practical side effect that he said he's gained from it. I would argue probably differently. But I think that his career is almost inescapable from his faith.
It is, but do you think that because of all the negative things about Scientology that have been revealed, say, you know, in the last 2 years, just the whole couch jumping incident, that has harmed him negatively?
There's absolutely no doubt at all as an actor, he's no longer looked on as an actor. He can't escape his public persona. So therefore, you cannot escape. When the audience is looking at him on screen now, they're seeing this is a guy who jumps up and down on couches, he's a proselytizer on behalf of this very controversial organization. So they look at him in a very skeptical light, and it's one of the reasons why Paramount dispensed with his services.
As we get into a little more on the Scientology aspect of your book, and can you just, for our audience and my audience, kind of briefly describe what Scientology is? And
great idea.
Just so people get an understanding, because it's a little vague. For some of us, and myself as well.
Yeah, well, obviously the book isn't just about Scientology.
No, exactly.
It's about Tom Cruise's life, his film career, and so on, because he is an important cultural figure. But certainly Scientology is an organization that was founded in the early 1950s by a science fiction writer called L. Ron Hubbard. He once famously said that the way to earn a million was to start a religion. So he wrote this book called Dianetics, which was the kind of original one of these psychotherapy self-help books on the kind of Tony Robbins line. It basically said that he was a cure for ulcers, for atheism, for homosexuality, for basically anything. It was basically eardrops and a floor wax. You know, he was basically it was basically saying that you could cure everything, and that was transformed into a religion, and he called it Scientology. He founded it, and from then onwards, they have several planks of thinking. One is that we are all made up of various spirits, and that one of the ideas is to get rid of the negative spirits in you to become what's known as clear, and for you to reach a higher sense of self by doing that. So basically the theory is that we can become our own gods. You don't worship a god, you worship yourself. They also believe in reincarnation. You come back forever and ever in different spirits. And they have various enemies, and their most notorious enemy is psychiatrists, and they want to see to use their phrase the global obliteration of psychiatry. So they basically argue that by following the what's called the bridge to happiness, going through various stages, you can reach personal salvation.
Well,
some of the criticism is how much it costs to go across that bridge to happiness.
Well, it is literally a pay-as-you-pray organization, except that you don't pray. You actually you use what's called e-meters, which are these, you hold these kind of crude lie detectors, which is meant to help to rid yourself of negative influences. And so the idea is that you are covered in these spirits of people these dead spirits of people sent to Earth millions of years ago and blown up by hydrogen bombs by an evil galactic ruler called Xenu. And this, you don't learn this kind of creationist myth until you've been in the organization for some time and you've reached a level where they feel that you will not die if you've discover these eternal truths.
We have some calls, but let's take one now if you don't mind, Andrew. We have a call from 646. You're on Blog Talk Radio. How are you?
Hey, guys. How are you doing?
Great. What's your name, please?
My name's Ian.
Ian.
Hey,
how are you?
Ian.
Hey, guys. How are you doing?
Good.
Excellent.
Really
Thank
great show.
Calling.
This is a fantastic show, and I really want to congratulate Andrew on an outstanding book, and I really advise everyone out there to get it because they're really going to learn a lot of myths about not only Hollywood, but the Church of Scientology and Tom Cruise. And I had a question for you, Andrew.
Yeah.
Basically, L. Ron Hubbard, did he create this religion, in your opinion? Was he serious, or was it just maybe perhaps, you know, he used to be a best-selling writer, and maybe did he just carry the joke a bit too far? Because people have told me that he never originally intended it to go as far as it did.
Well, certainly during the research of the book, several people who knew him have said to me that in private moments he said he wished he'd never started a religion because it created so much problems with the tax authorities and so on. He'd have been better off just paying the taxes and just continuing this as an aspect of self, as a self-help group. And it's one of the reasons why he founded it as a religion, was because he was the claims that he was making in the book were so seemingly outrageous to the scientific community that he would become something of a laughingstock. And so by saying it was a religion, it meant that you didn't have to put it for any kind of empirical proof or any kind of scientific tests. And that, a Scientologist would say, well, of course he was destined to do this. He'd done so much research over throughout his life. He'd visited, the mountains of Tibet. He'd analysed all kinds of other religions and so on and so forth. The odd person that I've spoken to who have dealt with him personally have always said that, well, actually he did have second thoughts about it.
When he died in I believe it was 86, said his financial residue was reportedly around $600 to $700 million. Where is it today, and where do you see it going? Because with all the negative publicity recently about the church, they seem to be able to do extremely amazing damage control. Travolta has donated to something to the tune of $10 million just for them to go after people. So where do you see this all going?
Well, I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, he signed papers shortly before his death, making sure that all the money from the sales of his books and all his other intellectual property went to Scientology, and that was orchestrated by the current leader, David Miscavige. And so his wife Sue did not receive much, nor did the children. So the wealth that he created went into Scientology, and. And certainly, it is, as we mentioned earlier, it's a pay-as-you-pray religion. You can pay wealth into the hundreds of thousands of dollars to reach a kind of an exalted state. But also, as you just mentioned, some of the celebrities pay an enormous amount. Tom Cruise, John Travolta, Jamie Packer, who is the son of Kerry Packer, the Australian media magnate, all help to underwrite this organization. So it has become, from being at the time of his death, at the time of Hubbard's death, an organization in crisis, where a number of the hierarchy had been in jail, where it was riffed by schisms, akin to the schism between the Protestant and the Catholic Church in the Middle Ages, where there was all kinds of infighting, where the tax authorities were after them, where it looked on the verge of collapse. And one of the things I found interesting about why Tom Cruise joined, or how he joined, is that he joined it at a time when the organization was on the brink of collapse.
And last question,
yeah.
And thank you, Alan and Don, for the time today. Any kid, Andrew, getting, let's say, off the bus in L.A., and they're a teenager off the Greyhound, and Scientologist recruiters are there to greet them, what advice do you have to these kids and their parents? Because, they get sort of brainwashed into joining the church, and, a year or two later, their life savings are down the tubes, and they got to start right back from zero.
Yeah, I mean, my advice would be don't. I mean, the German authorities officially say that this is a commercial organization that preys on the lonely, the weak, and the vulnerable, and you're never more vulnerable than when you're a teenage kid with stars in your eyes getting off the bus and getting off a Greyhound bus in Hollywood, and somebody comes along and says, we can make it happen for you.
On that note, Andrew, why do you think if they're preying on vulnerable people, does that mean celebs themselves are vulnerable people? I always see them as these very ego egocentric, sort of narcissistic people, yet they seem to be very drawn to this organization. Why do you think that is?
Well, I mean, I think you've just hit on it. I mean, to be an actor is a vulnerable, to be an actor, a model, anything like of an where you're actually putting yourself out there to be judged. It's not, it's you that's being judged. It's your ego. It's a high wire act. And it's a very difficult, I mean, you think of yourself as, you know, it's all very well talking about Tom Cruise, John Travolta, they're successful actors. But think of all those thousands of actors, you know, pumping gas and serving and being waiters in Hollywood, who are, you know, their self-confidence leeches out of them. And if you're in an organization where you're building up your confidence, where you're surrounded by smiley, happy people saying that you're a great person, that you can do this, and that just take another course, and, you know, he's paying another few more dollars, and this will give you the confidence to do it, then that's great. Because, you know, people always think that actors and actresses are some kind of, you know, geniuses, but they're not really. They're vulnerable, lonely people in a very, very intensely competitive profession.
Andrew, one last thing. I know you've just had such an amazing career in the publishing business and written, you know, some of the best biographies of all time. Where do you go from here? I had the pleasure of meeting you recently, and I've worked in television a long time. I really feel I wish you'd get your own television show, because I think it would be a hit in America. I think America needs you, because you tell it like it is, and I think it would just be fascinating. But where does it all go from here for you?
Well, I mean, certainly it'd be quite fun to do a television show, except, but it's a very different technique to being an author, really. I mean, I never quite know what my journey is going to be. It's, I mean, if I was to say to you that my career has always been a whole lot of coincidences, then I'm not really exaggerating. But certainly to do a TV show in America would be a lot of fun.
How about a radio show? Blog Talk Radio, we'd love to have you. And you'd be able to write your books.
That's a good idea.
Recorded. We have so many authors on this network, actually, who actually interview the people that they're building their book, and then the archives are available as content. So they're actually building their books on using Blog Talk. And
well, no,
Yoko Ono has been on, and Brad Pitt, and now, you know, of course, Andrew Morton.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that this is the way of the future. And just to make the point about this book, really, it's the Tom Cruise book is old technology, but what's happened is very much a way of the future, that the debate and the discussion has been very much on the internet and what you call the mass media, and I no longer call it that, I would call it the elite media. They've often shied away from discussions about Scientology, about Tom Cruise, about these things, and in a way, this is, for me, this is a seminal moment, that you're seeing the internet coming of age over the last few months, and you've seen it in the political demonstrations against Scientology by group Anonymous, by the way that the internet has been used in a far more sophisticated way than that many people have ever dreamed of. It is literally what Kropotkin used to talk about anarchy.
Hey, congratulations again, Andrew, on the book. I'm going to go and just listen to you guys. But
thanks for your calls and questions.
Thanks for your call, Ian.
Thank you very much. And this is great listening.
Thank
Keep
you,
up
Ian.
The great work, guys. Thank you, Don. Thank you, Alan. Ciao.
Thank you, Ian.
Have you,
you know, with all that's been written and so much has been on about this book, have you been harassed or threatened about this book? And from where, perhaps?
What's happened, there's been no physical harassment, and there's been obviously lots of legal letters, and Scientology themselves have often phoned up radio shows, TV shows, and so on to try and discourage them from having me on. And it's significant, for example, that not one of the Hollywood entertainment shows interviewed me, E! Entertainment or Entertainment Tonight, interviewed me about the biggest star in Hollywood. And I refer back to my original comments about the fact that the mass media have been very pusillanimous, they've sat on their hands rather about these issues. They don't seem to be as aggressive or as creative in looking at aspects of news.
Interesting. We have another call two of you, don't mind. Let's see, and we'll see what how they like to add to the conversation here. 863, let me just get this on here. 863, you've been on hold for a while. How are you? You're on Blog Talk Radio. What's your name?
How you doing? This is Jamie from Movie Geeks United.
Yes, hi, Jamie.
Jamie's hey, how are
a host on Blog Talk Radio and does a show and has had Brian De Palma and others on his show. So what's your question for Andrew?
Yes, I have very quickly, I have two questions, and I'll just spew them off, and then I'll let you go and let you answer them. The first one, I've always been curious since the couch jumping incident and since the kind of public displays that have drawn ridicule for the first time in his career, I think they really correlate very closely to his firing of Pat Kingsley as his publicist. So I'm wondering what kind of a stronghold she had over that public persona prior to that. And the second question was, the Odyssey that was the shooting of Eyes Wide Shut, did that have anything to do with the disillusion of his marriage to Nicole Kidman?
Well, two very good questions. Well, let me, as I say in the book, that that he really starts to proselytize on behalf of Scientology way before the couch jumping. And when you actually look at his transformation actually took place during just over 9/11. One of his great friends from school, Michael Lefort, was killed in the World Towers, and that together with the kind of, shall we say, the apocalyptic vision that Hubbard had of that you know the end of the world is nigh, you've got to work harder to save the planet and so on. That's that, you know, as the smoke clouds billowed over Manhattan, he was very much affected by the fact that the present leader David Miscavige said he had to work harder, run faster, really put your shoulders to the wheel. And also that coincided with his divorce from Nicole Kidman, who wasn't particularly interested in Scientology. One of the reasons for the break of the marriage was the fact that she had kind of fallen away from his faith. And all those aspects combined to together with other aspects, he then became far more vociferous about Scientology than ever before. He talked about how it helped him to read properly in 2000, you know, when he did interviews for Collateral and Mission Impossible and The Last Samurai. He was using his the films and the film promotion to meet ambassadors, to meet politicians, to meet presidents. So it wasn't the firing of Pat Kingsley that caused it. In fact, Pat Kingsley, according to Hollywood insiders that I spoke to, had actually said that he was doing too much Scientology way before the Oprah thing. And when she mentioned that, she effectively sealed her fate. But he'd been doing it for several years, since 2001, so way before the whole Matt Lauer interviews in 2005. And then to answer your other question about Eyes Wide Shut, certainly it was a very disconnected period of Tom Cruise's life. First of all, he was playing a part that he did not like at one bit. He was on set for something like 400 of the 406 days, a kind of Guinness Book of Records for the shooting of Eyes Wide Shut. He was only supposed to be there for it was supposed to be a couple of months shoot, and he was playing a very restrained character, the Doctor. He didn't enjoy playing that character. His wife, you know, was not. It was a very kind of disconnected period where Stanley Kubrick, who was perhaps more controlling in many respects than Tom Cruise himself. So he found him. So there's this kind of triangular relationship where Kubrick was controlling both husband and wife as husband and wife, but also as husband and wife as actors. So it was a very dislocating period for both of them, I think. And then she went on to do Blue Room, this stage play with Ian Glen, and there were all kinds of rumours there that she was having an affair with him, and so you saw a kind of a dislocation both on the set and also in real life.
Yeah.
I want to go back to somebody had a great question in the chat room. I hope you don't mind. It's sort of back to something you said earlier, and they wanted to know. You said that you thought the media was sort of sitting on their hands on this subject, not just the Tom, your book in particular, Tom Cruise, but specifically Scientology. Do you think it has to do with the fact that they are afraid of losing access to some of these major stars that are Scientologists? Or is it a fear of being sued by Scientology or being blacklisted in some way?
Well, it's both. I mean, you know, I mean, one of these, I won't say which one, but one of these Hollywood shows, the producer actually phoned up my public relations person at St. Martin's Press to say, you've got to put out a statement to say that we are not interviewing Andrew Morton because we're getting heavy pressure from Tom Cruise's people. So, I mean, that's how, I mean, and you know, something even worse, a reviewer of the book was said to someone that they thought it was a private conversation. Unfortunately, this person knew me, to say that they were a lot harder on the book because they were scared of being intimidated by Scientology. That's how pathetic the elements of the American media have been. So, you know, don't run away with the idea that the mass media in America is or the elite media in America is somehow being is pugilistic. It's not. I've been very surprised at how supine it is, and how actually it's been the internet, it's been the outlets on the internet which have been prepared to take the chances that the mainstream media haven't.
Well, that's for sure. I mean, with Blog Talk Radio and our network, it's a citizen broadcast network, and we've produced 75,000 broadcasts.
I mean, they're all. I mean, you've got to bear in mind that all these big companies, NBC and the rest of, they're all terrified of being sued.
Right.
Terrified.
Right.
I mean, you know, to the point where they will say yes, we'd like to do it, and then the lawyers get their hands on it and they turn it down.
Well, we have another call, and this call also has been on the line for a while, so let's pick this up. It's 714. What's your name, and you're on Blog Talk Radio. Hello? Yeah, hi. Hello,
sounds like a bad line.
I'm sorry, you're on a bad, you're on a cell phone, I think. You can call back. I'm sorry about that, thanks. So now in the UK, let's talk a little about Europe and what's happening in Germany and the UK. The book was not published and distributed in the UK?
No, it wasn't published in the UK because we have, we have quite repressive laws about freedom of expression in Britain. And this isn't just an isolated incident now. It's something which is deeply troubling publishers that books which can be published in America and the rest of the world, even if a few copies get to Britain, the people can sue you. So, for example, there's an example of I think it's an American academic who wrote a book about people who are raising funds for Al-Qaeda and mentioned a Saudi Arabian businessman in the course of that. And the businessman was able to sue in Britain and win handsomely for something like $700,000 because 12 copies of the book arrived in Britain. So in a flat world, if you use that theory, Britain is a black hole of repression, and it is ISIS. I find it appalling, and that Britain, which is, you know, supposed to be one of the most democratic countries in the world, is so repressive.
I actually have a question about that. How do you now? I've been told by some members, you know, some people who are interested in your book, that are in the UK, and they're very interested in how they can get hold of this book. And there's rumors that some of the book has excerpts from the book have been sort of scanned and are made available to people in the UK. How do you feel about that as far as, you know, freedom of speech and then copyright infringement? Because that's certainly something Church Scientology is used to sue people on. But you know, you're not making money off of it, but you probably want people to be able to read this information. You didn't create it in a vacuum. Are you upset that maybe your material is being made available to people in the UK through other means?
Not really. I mean, it's first time, actually, you mentioning that, it's the first I've heard of it. But I know that obviously people may or may not have ordered the book from other outlets and had it shipped in. But it is a pity that something you've labored long and hard about. And let's just get away from the idea that this is some kind of polemic against Tom Cruise and against Scientology. It's a measured and thoughtful, what I think, a thoughtful account of his
Absolutely.
Life and Scientology. So I think it is not like it's some kind of vituperative attack on someone who's achieved so much in his life, or and the faith which he quite obviously and sincerely believes in. It is an attempt to understand and analyze these things. So, I mean, the fact that I am a well-established biographer with a pedigree which goes back 20 years, and having written about some of the most interesting people on the planet, the fact that and I'm from Britain, the fact that my book can't be published in Britain, as you can probably tell from the sound of my voice, is utterly infuriating.
Were you surprised? Did you?
I was absolutely shell-shocked when the British publisher said, well, there's no point in us publishing it because it would have to take so much out that it wouldn't be worth it. We'd make ourselves a laughingstock. I mean, it was, and part of the reason is that, according to British law, anything that has been said before cannot be ever. You cannot use that in evidence. You've got to prove it again. So you've got to prove every point. Now, the problem is this: that it's price and payoff. I mean, you know, Tom Cruise is a big name in America, but not such a big name in Britain. So a publisher's going to make a value judgment. Do we actually publish a book which is going to sell, I don't know, 20,000 copies in the UK, but cost us possibly $2 million in legal fees? And then the answer is obviously no. So, and Scientology have used this very successfully over the years. They have what's called put libel chill on people so that people are terrified to say anything because they've seen that Scientology have and Tom Cruise himself have sued in the past, and they're scared of racking up big legal bills in the future.
You're listening to the Alan Levy Show on Blog Talk Radio, and Andrew Morton is our guest, author, famous biographer, and Dawn Olson is co-hosting today, and Dawn's with Glossop.com, and actually a host on Blog Talk Radio, doing Glossop Radio. When do you do your show, Dawn?
My show is on Sunday nights at 10 p.m., but we also do a 30-minute segment on Sean Daly's BTR Today show. It starts around, it's like usually from 3 to 3:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Great. We had Yoko Ono on about 3-4 weeks ago, and Eric, Dawn's husband, brought Yoko on, and she was in L.A., and she called into a show, and we were chatting just like this. It was wonderful. It's a great platform for that.
It is
a great platform, and I cannot tell you how excited I was to have, I mean, I read Andrew's book, and what's so funny about when he's talking about what's happening in the UK, I think the book, in many ways, was very kind to Tom Cruise. I mean, you portray him as a loving father, portray him as not gay in any way. In fact, he's quite heterosexual, quite a ladies' man, which is not only the image, you know, he wants to project, but it's also an image that's true, I think, a true depiction of him. And it's very balanced, and I got the sense from reading it that you were just being honest. There was no, you know, you're a very disinterested party other than the fact that you're just, you know, I'm gathering this information, I'm talking to people who knew Tom, and I'm presenting this information for you to discern as you will. So I'm sort of surprised that, you know, you're having this almost, it's not a blackout of the media, but it's not merely the press you've gotten on some of your books that are just enormous, huge hits. I mean, your Princess Diana book was enormous. And Tom Cruise, a polarizing figure, yes, but a fascinating one, certainly. And it's shocking to me that you haven't been able to just do rounds and rounds of press. I mean, I felt thrilled to get you and that Alan, you know, was willing to share this spotlight with me. And I know you don't want to emphasize too much on the Scientology part, but something you and I talked about, which I think you felt very passionate about, is how Scientology sort of has disconnected Nicole Kidman from her own children. The children that she and Tom had together, they adopted two children, Isabella, who's I think now 16, and Connor, who's 13. And you seem very concerned about the Church of Scientology's disconnection policy, and I'm just curious, you know, what did you discover about that when doing the research for this book?
Well, I mean, one of the aspects was that it was very difficult to even find a photograph of Nicole Kidman and her children together since the divorce, which is what, six, seven years ago now. And certainly speaking to people who have been members of this organization, that they've had the heartbreak of knowing that if they decide to leave, they have to also leave their wives or their husbands or their children if their children decide to stay in. And it just seems to me that it is quite a harsh organization where if you're either in or you're out, there's no either way, no middle course. And certainly one of the questions that I would want one of these entertainment reporters, if they had the courage to do it, when the next time Tom Cruise does an interview or does a promotion for one of his films, is to say, look, you're a great family man, and we can see that you obviously adore your children, adore your new baby, but how come you're such a vociferous member for an organization that splits up so many families? And this isn't just me saying that. There are so many people that I've spoken to and interviewed over the last couple of years who have said, shown me pictures of people that they've never seen again. It could be their daughters, could be their sons, could be their wives. And it is kind of remarkable that someone who seems so keen on the family is part of very harsh authoritarian organization.
We have another call, 330-562. You're on Blog Talk.
Hi there.
How are you, Eric?
I am just swell. I heard my name mentioned and I had to respond. It was Pavlov's dog.
Oh, thank you.
How are you doing, Alan?
Great, thank you. And you have a question for Andrew?
Yes, Andrew. I watched with great interest Don's video interviews last night. She was seeing for the first time, and it was really, really fascinating. Having not read any of the books, I will freely admit, yet, although I'm certainly going to follow up with the Tom Cruise book and I think move my way back from there, I was really struck, and Don mentioned it too, just, what an extremely erudite, measured, intelligent person you are. And I think it's really interesting that there's this dichotomy. And it's obviously purely just perception that's out there, and it ties into what you were mentioning about the lack of media response or the media timidity regarding the subject of this book, and one can imagine it's probably mostly the Scientology aspect. But I find it really interesting that there is this dichotomy between the perception of a entertainment/celebrity-type writer, one who covers that subject in the broadest sense, and the reality there. And I'm wondering how often you run into that. I mean, we see it even with Dawn. I mean, I know Dawn. She's my wife. I know she's quite thoughtful. She's intelligent. She has a lot of ideas. But the perception is quite often that she is, hey, she's just writing about celebrities and entertainment, and that she must be an idiot.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that's the cross you have to bear, I'm afraid. I mean, if you can be dumb and write about nuclear physics, but what I've always found, I studied history at university at college, and what I've always found is that history is best understood through people, and obviously that's. It's called the weak theory of history, where you understand, the great themes and trends of history by examining the individuals. Many people, historians listening, will probably disagree with that, because it's a very old-fashioned view. But I've found that you can understand the history of a period by looking at the individuals, and certainly the history of Madonna's life. You can understand. You can really certainly start to put the whole New York scene into context. I wrote a book about the president of Kenya, Daniel Arap Moi, and you could understand the history of the country by looking at the history of his life. And similarly, modern celebrity worship, you can look at Tom Cruise's life.
Absolutely.
Especially now, because this is such an entertainment / celebrity dominant era.
I mean, we literally do live in a soundbite culture. I mean, I did an interview for E Entertainment, ironically, yesterday about the Young Royals, and the producer before she said, "Look, speak very very quickly and speak in soundbites, please." keep your answers
they
short.
Call it, they call it online now. It's called media snacking. It's
yeah.
called that's what it is. It's snacking and. I find that funny.
So we live in an age where the very nature of the media gravitates against understanding. So it is the very mechanisms by which we operate do not allow for any further thought or understanding. And it is, you know, and as I say, ironically, it is something that the internet may well address, because this, for example, is one of the longest interviews I've ever done.
Right. So, I mean, and it's coming down to an end, but that's what we're all about, is the conversation and really understanding the issues and giving people an opportunity to talk, not just famous authors such as yourself, but anyone who's got something to say about their own book, one who sells 500 copies.
Yeah.
They spent months discussing, researching the book, and they have an opportunity. So, yes, media snacking and the soundbite era is here, but it's not on this network. So I want to thank you, Andrew, for spending the time with us and discussing this. And anything we can do to help promote the book and help promote any of the things you'd like to discuss, it would be our pleasure to do so.
Well, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you, and thank you very much for inviting me. It's been a delight.
Are we done already?
Yeah, we're done. We're winding it down, so thank you.
Okay, that was the end.
Well, you have another question for Andrew. We can certainly have that in.
I don't know. Is he still on?
Yes, Andrew's on.
Are you still on, Andrew?
Yeah, I'm just still on. Go on.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
One more question.
I'm sorry. This is a question that I think you will not mind answering. Since you sort of initiated all of this discussion of Scientology in the media, what would you like to see happen as a result of all the attention that's been paid, because of your book and the release of the Tom Cruise video, within the Church of Scientology?
Well, I don't think I don't think anything is going to happen. I think it is a liberal misunderstanding to think that just because you talk about something, you're going to change something. You don't. False thinking. I think that the Scientology is based on certain immutable precepts laid down by L. Ron Hubbard. They're not going to change. It is a vengeful organization. Because it reflects that aspect in the founder's philosophy and his personality. It is an organization that seeks the global obliteration of psychiatry and all health workers. You're not going to change that. So I think it's really a question that people should be aware of what it truly stands for and what it truly represents and its real origins, as opposed to being masked in kind of PR flim-flam.
Soundbite.
Do you have a few more, about 7 or 8 more minutes, Andrew?
Yeah, let's do it till
perfect.
Top
let's
of the
do
hour,
it for the full hour. That's great, because there's a couple of questions in the chat room. One of them was from Lindy, asking, I'm curious if Mr. Morton thinks the media has been fair or unfair to Tom Cruise in his career.
I think that the media has been very laudatory of Tom Cruise. I mean, if I read Cruise Control once, or Tom Terrific once, I've read it 10,000 times. So he's had a very smooth ride in his career. And certainly when he started jumping up and down on Oprah's sofa, that was his decision to do that. He was wholly unexpected. And certainly looking at his life and how considerate he is in every aspect of his life, from his film life to his personal life, you do get the feeling that you wonder whether he actually thought, I might do that, I might just try and push that envelope and just give that and do that on Oprah.
Well, it was a deliberate decision
to put him up front and center, and in many respects, this is the most debated and discussed faith-based organization in the world today. I mean, there's lots of small churches around the world that do not get a fraction of the coverage that Scientology gets. So, it's a brilliant piece of PR as well.
I had another kind of moving off from this, and there have been some questions in the chat rooms about what are your next ideas and for books, and do you have a plan for something that you can talk about? And if not, what would be the what would you love to write about? I mean, what would you just love to cover and
well, I mean, the books that I love to read are, I mean, I like reading biographies, obviously, but I like, the books I love are kind of boys' own adventures. I loved The Perfect Storm. I loved Touching the Void. I love Into Thin Air, the book about the disastrous Everest expedition.
Into the Wild was a great book as well.
Yeah, so that's the kind, I mean, I'd love to do that kind of book. I mean, I'm just finished reading Devil in the White City, the book about the exposition in Chicago in the 1890s and the serial killer that lived there. I mean, those kinds of books, which are in part both non-fiction, a bit of imagination, but also essentially also historical, but also, you know, and reveal a part of that life, I find a kind of thoughtful journalism, you might say, I find really interesting.
Have you written nonfiction?
I've always write nonfiction. I've never written any fiction. I've never written any fiction. I think you've got the problem is having a great ear for dialogue, and you know, you as a nonfiction writer, you're used to every sentence has to have backup somewhere in your notes or in your in your reading. As a fiction writer, you're out there. It's just your imagination. And if I was going to write fiction, I'd have done it by now.
Interesting. You know, I think Andrew's covered a lot. And like I said, we have a video interview with Andrew. It's, you know, almost a half an hour, and that was very kind of him to grant me that. And that will be going, the rest will be going up on glossop.com. So we cover some different material than what we got to cover here. But, you know, Andrew's great, and I recommend the book.
Maybe we should ask the St. Martin's folks. I mean, would they, you know, this archive is available and will be available in 30 minutes. It'll be posted on my website at blogtalkradio.com/Alan Levy.
Mm-hmm.
The player and the MP3 is available. I can send it over to the St. Martin's. I mean, how do they feel about, you know, posting this up and having, providing more color on this book?
Oh, yeah, they're all for it, that kind of stuff. Of course,
great.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
we'll forward it to them as well.
Yeah. It's all the fun of the fair.
Yeah, I mean, but when you went into this, were you just surprised about the media, you know, the elite media not covering it? Was this something that shocked you?
Well, I mean, it made me smile in a way, because this is not my first time at the Rodeo, really. But with the Diana book, that was my first time that I'd, as it were, taken on the mass media, which is, you know, people listening will think, oh, well, the mass media, because people in the media, therefore, they go for the underdog. They don't. They're basically, mass media follow convention, and they help to, everything is about convention. Everything is about following convention. So when I did the Diana book, I was attacked, obviously, by the British media consistently for many years, even though the book was, you know, with Diana's full permission and authorization. And it's similarly, you come to this country, and one of the callers said, you know, has Tom Cruise had a good press? Yes, he damn well has, because, you know, when the book came out, it was almost, there was a kind of sense of knee-jerk deference to Hollywood royalty.
I mean, I can't think of a better set of circumstances or topics for a book. I mean, it's got everything in it. It's so much intrigue and you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think we should.
It's fascinating, and it's amazing, the reaction.
It is very interesting, because it, you know, scratch the surface of all these things, and you find out how society really ticks. And this is what I've mentioned earlier. You know, when you talk about this period of in our society, you can look at this as one of the elements of it.
Well, we're excited that you joined us today. Again, this is Blog Talk Radio. This is an open network and platform. Your voice is welcome here at any time, and hopefully we can have you back on to talk about some of your other books that you've written and ones coming up. So thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. Nice
Andrew.
To talk to you, Alan. Bye-bye. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Dawn.
Bye-bye. Thanks, Dawn.
Thank you, Andrew.
Bye-bye.
Thanks,
Andrew.
Thanks, Dawn. And thank you, Alan, so much.
Yeah, thank you. You know, just it's great, and as Andrew went through and struggled with getting this book covered on traditional media, and the fact that here, you know, Blog Talk Radio, we welcome him here and to talk about it. It's a book. It's free speech, right? I mean, he wrote a fascinating book, and he's a noted author. So thank you for helping coordinate it.
It was my pleasure. I mean, it was a selfish thing on my part. I was very interested in the subject. It's something we've been covering pretty extensively on glossflip.com. And even at blogcritics.org, they have a lot of people who talk about Scientology. And, you know, who better than the person who sort of initiated this mass movement? I mean, he may not be the front runner. He may not be pushing it beyond the book itself, but you could tell at the very end there when he was talking about it that he was concerned that there's an organization in this world that's not being looked at more closely for some of its, you know, alleged abuses. And I firmly agree with him on that. No matter what, we live in an information age. There's no reason why people shouldn't be well informed, right. No matter what it is, whether it's politics or religion. We should all, you know,
We're going to lose the live stream.
That's okay.
And I want to thank everyone for joining me. This is the Alan Levy Show, and the archive will be posted in 15 or 20 minutes. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Alan.
Thanks for joining Alan and Hillary on the Alan Levy Show. Make sure to join the conversation by calling 347-677-0649 and listen to the Alan Levy Show on Blog Talk Radio.